গৌরানিতাই 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 জয় গৌরানিতাই জয় গৌরানিতাই 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 জয় গৌরানিতাই জয় জগন্নাথ জগন্নাথ বলদেব জয় সুবাজা জয় কিশোর কিশোরী কিশোর কিশোরী কিশোর কিশোরী জয় কিশোর কিশোরী জয় কিশোর কিশোরী কিশোর কিশোরী কিশোর কিশোরী জয় কিশোর কিশোরী জয় প্রভুপাদ 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 জয় জয় প্রভুপাদ জয় জয় প্রভুপাদ 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 জয় জয় প্রভুপাদ নিতাই গৌড় হারিব 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 নিতাই গৌড় হারিব Jaya Radha Madhava Munda Vihara. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Jasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Paramahamsapariviraj Gacharya Shudra Shudra Shri Shri Marasavang Graces Bhaktivaranta Swami Prabhupada Ki Raj Granta Shri Mad Bhagavatam Ki Samveda Bhaktivaranta Ki Nitai Go Pramanandi. All glories of the Summa Devotees, all glories of Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga. O namo bhagavate vasudevaya. O namo bhagavate vasudevaya. O namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Tarika dhatu rabhasa Puranjana purim nirpa Rurudhur bhoma bhogadhyam Taratpa nagapalitam Tarika dhatu rabhasa Puranjana purim nirpa Rurudhur bhoma bhogadhyam Dratpa nagapalitam. Tadikadatu nabhasa Puranjana purim nirpa Rudhur bhoma bhogadhyam Jaratpa nagapalitam Tam ekadatu rambhasa. Puran Jana Puran Pa Rudur Bumabul Gadhyam Others. Tarikadatum Rabhasa. Tarikadatum Rabhasa. Puranjana Puranirpa Rudhur Bhuma Bhogadhyam Charatma Nagapalitam Te Day Ekada Once upon a time To Then Rabhasa With great force Puranjana Purim, in the city of Puranjana, Nripa, O King, Rudhu, encircled, Bhoma Bhoga Adhyam, full of sense enjoyment, Jarat, old, Panaga, by the serpent, Palitam, protected. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation: Once the dangerous soldiers attacked the city of Puranjana with great force. Although the city was full of paraphernalia for sense gratification, it was being protected by the old serpent. Purport: As one's body engages in sense gratification, it becomes weaker and weaker daily. Finally, the vital force becomes so weak that it is herein compared to a weak serpent. The life air has already been compared to the serpent. When the vital force within the body becomes weak, the body itself also becomes weak. At such a time, the death symptoms, that is, the dangerous soldiers of death's superintendent
began to attack.
kadamayam dadati svabhadantikam. Vanchakapaturubhyashchakasindubhyari
becomes increasingly weak by indulgence in sense gratification. And also, of course, the time factor in old age and disease is also helping the body to become weaker and weaker and weaker. And as the body becomes more and more weak, then the Prahlad Maharaj is telling his friends, Toto yatita kushala kshemaya bhayamashitaha sharinam purusham yava na vipadyeta pushkalam. This is a cool verse. I learned it because of the thing we were hearing a few days back. He says that, so now that one has acquired this human form of life in this material world, which is full of fear, the material world is full of fear, so it's called bhayam ashritaha, or bhava ashritaha means the material ocean, is full of fear. If he is intelligent and aspiring for the highest aim in life, shemaya means the highest aim in life, then he should do so while the body is stout and strong and not embarrassed by dwindling. So I thought that was a very relevant verse in context with Srila Prabhupada speaking here. While the body is stout and strong, one should try to achieve the goal of life before the body becomes embarrassed by dwindling, where it may not be possible to so easily think of Krishna. Even in the Ishopanishad, the devotee, at the end of the Ishopanishad, the devotee is praying to Krishna, may you please remember all my sacrifices and all that I have done for you. And when you first hear this prayer, it sounds kind of fruitive, doesn't it? It's like if you go to Kishore Kishore and say, please remember all that I've done for you, you know, and look out for me and take me back home back to Godhead. Don't forget all that I've done for you. You know, that's like something you might say to your friend, a materialistic, don't you remember all I've done for you? Usually parents have the tendency to bring that out when we want to join the Hare Krishna movement. Don't you remember all that I've done for you? Why are you getting serious about Krishna consciousness? You know, that tendency is there. So it appears, at face value, it appears that the devotee is also approaching the Lord with a fruit of desire. Please remember all that I've done for you. But actually, it's a prayer of dependence on Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada very beautifully describes there in that purport of Ishopanishad how the devotee, the human form of life has to develop mental capacity. So at the end of life, the Maya Shakti will forcibly and put impressions into the mind of the soul, and which may not be so conducive for going back home, back to Godhead. So the devotee is very concerned that at the time of death, especially if I was engaged in sinful activity previously, that right at the time of death, the Maya Shakti will force those images or impressions into the mind, and then my mind might focus on one of those things at the time of death, and then I'll take a body accordingly. So the devotee is really, really worried. He's really concerned. And it's a prayer of dependence. Please, Krishna, this is my situation that due to my minute position in this material world and due to the insurmountable nature of Maya, Daivyesha Guna Mayi, Mama Maya Dharatya, it's not like anyone could just overcome it, like just cross over. I'm very small and Maya is very strong. Therefore, my dear Lord, if I am not able to remember you because of my position, then you please remember me, and you remember all that I've done for you, and please, you know, take me back home, back to Godhead. So it's a very beautiful prayer. So similarly, the idea that we're hearing here is that this mood, this consciousness, should be cultivated while the body is stout and strong. It is not that when the body is overcome by weakness, that at that time I'll be able to do it. That's what the devotee in Ishopanishad is praying. Not at that time I'm going to be able to remember you so easily. Therefore, while I have my strength, then let me take to this cultivation. Sometimes those who are having very strong materialistic predilections, they think that after 50, I'll take to spiritual life seriously. When I'm overcome by weakness, so I can't do anything else, okay, and then that's how I'll hear Hari Katha, because anyway, I can't do anything else. It's like sometimes you'll see these big pandal programs in India, and there'll be like some Bhagavad Gita. And when you look in the audience, all the old people. There are no young people there. Srila Prabhupada also said that, he was mentioning about, I think, Gaudiya Math, where he was saying all widows come only. You know, it's like, oh, I'm too old to do anything else. That time, let me take the hearing process. Let me take the chanting. He says, now my senses are too weak to do anything else. But At that time, there's so many dangers, is that if one tries to do that at that point in his life, then generally, aside from having physical strength to practice devotional service or spiritual life, one generally doesn't have the strength to overcome misconceptions. Because it takes a sort of spiritual strength to overcome misconceptions, which we've been holding on to since time immemorial. And in the youth, when we are still impressionable, we're still a little bit open-minded because we're still trying to find our way in life, etc. So then we usually have greater strength to do the necessary work of removing misconceptions by becoming humble, etc. But when you become very old and experienced, then at that time it is a huge challenge to overcome misconceptions because I've experienced life. You know, what do you all know? You're just young people. You don't know anything. But I have experience. I know by my experience. Generally, we were discussing this previously. We take the experiences that we have to be very substantial in the matter of spiritual learning. Although spiritual life is ultimately an experience, we have to come to the platform of experiencing Krishna directly. Bhakti paresha anubhavo virakter anyatra traisha trika ekakala prapadya manasya yatash natashus tushti pushikshu apayonugasam. It is explained in the Bhagavatam that for those persons who have taken to devotional service, then three things happen simultaneously for those who are progressively moving forward in devotional service. They experience devotion, bhakti. They experience paresha anubhava, which means direct experience of the Lord. And virakti, they become detached from matter. In the same way that a person who is engaged in eating becomes nourished, satisfied, and also freed from hunger. So although devotional service and its perfection is a spiritual experience, emotional spiritual experience, in this stage of learning, if we think our experience has a lot of validity, then that blocks out our ability to hear things which are beyond our experience jurisdiction. A lot of spiritual life is beyond the scope of things that we've experienced. And if we give ultimate authority or deference to our limited experience jurisdiction, it blocks hearing. So then when one grows really old and he's gotten so much experience in life, then it makes it very hard to hear. It makes it extremely hard to hear because, privately speaking, there can be nothing beyond their experience jurisdiction. And it's not that they will articulate it like that. It's not that they even consciously may be thinking that way. But in terms of application, it is clear that unable to hear. So, and there are many examples of this inability. Anyway, so therefore, like one story I remember hearing in Chalpati, one devotee wanted to join the Brahmacharya ashram. And generally, no one is happy about that. No family members are happy about that. So the father, he was about 60, 65 years old. He came to the temple. It just came to my mind just now. And he wanted to get his son back from, you know, ruining his life by joining the Brahmacharya ashram. So he came and asked the devotees, where's my son? I want to take him. This is not proper. He is too young. And this spiritual life is for persons like me when they're old. You know, like I said, when you're old and can't do anything else, you're incapacitated. So then that time take to Harinam Sankirtan and hearing. But he's young. He has his whole life ahead of him. So the devotees told him, okay, we'll let him go and we'll take you. And the man said, no, thank you. You take him. The devotees told me this story in Chalpati when I went, so I thought it was pretty humorous. And the point I'm making is that the old age, you become so solid in one's misconceptions that they've been reinforced by a lifetime of material experience that unable to take to Krishna consciousness, unable to hear, don't have the strength to overcome the things that I know to be true because of my experience. I know this to be true because I've experienced it, therefore it must be true, as if material experience is the all in all. So therefore, Prahlada Maharaj is warning, while the body is stout and strong, one should take seriously this spiritual life. Don't wait until mental and physical decrepitude override our ability to even chant the holy name of Krishna. Just like, who is that? Kulashekar is praying that my voice may be choked up with mucus. At that time, I might not be able to think of you. Let me die now. It's a devotional sentiment. But right now, let me leave the body. While I'm able to clearly focus on you, clearly perform devotional activities, I'm not overcome by mental and physical decrepitude. So sometimes we get the wrong type of encouragement from our society, or even sometimes from persons we may look up to in the material world or in the material sense, where they advise us to spend a lot of our time in the matter of like fixing ourselves up in a career and making all types of arrangements for those things because we're at that point in our life. And then as you know, and of course do Krishna consciousness, but make sure you keep a balanced program. You know, the balance being, you know, 55 hours dedicated to building your career and 2 hours dedicated to coming to the Sunday feast. Balance. Make sure it's balanced. Don't be too crazy now. Make sure it's a balanced life. And then and gradually purify and make advancement. And then when you're old and mature, but you can see by the persons who will give advice like that, you can see them by their own, let's say, achar, that they're unable to give up household attachments and other such things based on the bodily concept of life. Even though they're advising us like that, maybe because they've taken to spiritual life at a later age or whatever it may be, you can see that they spent all their youth building a career, expanding the bodily concept of life in the form of society, friendship, and love, family, etc. That when it comes time to move forward, they don't have the strength to do it. It's being mentioned here about sannyas. One telling example from the Bhagavatam is Dhritarashtra. I mean, he was literally like days before leaving his body, and he was still attached to materialistic household life. You know, being maintained by the Pandavas, he was still feeling in his heart that he was a king, as described there in that section of the Bhagavatam, I'm the king. He was, you know, delusional. And Vidura came and said, what is this? Your teeth are falling out. You know, you've already been blind since birth, and now you've become hard of hearing also. And he mentions, I was just looking at that before I came down. And you're being maintained by the food given by Bhima. And that was like a shot, you know, he was taking a shot at him because Bhima killed all his sons. And therefore he was greatly angry at Bhima. In fact, I think he tried to kill Bhima at one point by an embrace. You know, they said, bring Bhima to me, I want to embrace him. I think that time Krishna, as usual, interfered, and he made like a brass or what was it, like a brass or a stone form of Bhima, and said, "Here it is." And then Dhritarashtra embraced and crushed the stone figure to dust. So that's called the hug of death. That's a very intense hug. We may get some good hugs, but that type of hug we don't want, you know. So he just crushed the thing. That's what he was going to do to Bhima. So that's how angry he was at Bhima. So then Vidura said, now you're being maintained by the food given by Bhima. And it was like a shot in order to help inspire him to give up his mundane attachment. So anyway, the point that we're making is that such advice that may be given to us by persons that we may even consider superiors to spend our youth in making a career for ourselves, all these things. Then we look at their example and see how much they're entrenched and materialistic householder life, and unable to give it up, unable to actually really, you know, householder life, varnashram, is meant to become progressively detached, not progressively entangled. But what happens in the modern situation is because of lack of sufficient training, persons enter into that ashram, and not that they're intentionally trying to even become grihamedis, but it happens automatically because of lack of sufficient training, and they become more and more attached unknowingly, and it overcomes one imperceptibly. It's not like I can even perceive it until after the fact, usually. So Prahlad Maharaj is very much advising us to take seriously this human form of life while the body is stout and strong. So that's the first part of the purport, Prabhupada speaking about the body becoming weak. So then after that, how to do so? How to make the best of this human form of life? So then Prabhupada is mentioning about Varnashram here. I'll just read it. According to the Vedic system, before coming to such a stage, when one is overcome by weakness, one should leave home and take sannyas to preach the message of God for the duration of life. So Varnashram is not, okay, immediately take sannyas, unless you're Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you have that confidence. But the idea is that Varnashram culture is meant to progressively move us toward that stage. That's the idea of human culture, that progressively move, just like, so it starts with the youth. Komara atret pragyo, dharmam bhagavatan iha, durlabha manusham janma, ta apya dhruvam artadam. Prahlad Maharaj, I've been reading Prahlad Maharaj because we're trying to meditate on the Shingadev, so Prahlad Maharaj verses are coming up. So he says that if one is intelligent, pragya means intelligent person, then he should, from his very youth, komara means from the age of birth to five, starting from there, one should acharat means one should practice. Which from one practice? Dharmam bhagavatam iha. He should practice that duty or that dharma which is characterized by pure devotion to Krishna. Iha, he should do it in this life. Iha means in this life. Prabhupada translated, in this life. In this life, do it. Don't think about in the future life. Like sometimes one time Prabhupada's disciple, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, if I'm 51% this life advanced, then from next life I'll be 51%. Because there is no loss or diminution. You know, neha bikrama nashosti prativayana vidite. And Prabhupada to that told, if you didn't make it this life, why you will make it next life? You know, this life gets serious. So dharma bhagavataniya means in this life you should practice that duty characterized by pure devotion to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada particularly points out in the purport that Bhagavad Dharma in the age of Kali specifically refers to the cultivation of the name of Krishna. And the, auxiliary duties which help nourish that cultivation of the name of Krishna. Worship of Krishna in Kali Yuga means coming to the point of developing taste for the holy name of Krishna. Otherwise, it is highly doubtful that we'll be experiencing great advancement in the age of Kali, because the cultivation of the name just happens to be the Dharma for the age of Kali Yuga. So those duties which are auxiliary means they give support to that cultivation. So that primary cultivation is the cultivation of the name. Prabhupada points it out there in the purport. And then other duties can be there, provided they do not detract from the cultivation of the name of Krishna. Ata pumbir dvija shesha vanashrama vibhagashaha swanusti chastra dharmasya samsidya haritoshanam. Those duties which are done for the pleasure of Krishna and therefore do not detract from the chanting of the holy name of Krishna can help one to achieve complete perfection, samsidya. But if one is observing that it's an impediment, then one has to systematically see how to remove such an impediment. Anyway, that's what the human form of life is meant for. So then he says this human form of life is very rarely attained. And although rarely attained, and although temporary like other bodies, it is arthadam, it is full of meaning. Although it is temporary like other bodies, it is full of meaning. That is to implicitly suggest that other forms of life are not full of meaning. It's an implicit statement. This form of life is full of meaning. As I said, the other forms of life are not full of meaning. Why are they not? And that includes uncivilized human forms of life also. Uncivilized meaning not trained up human forms of life also. Why are they not meaningful? So then it is described there because the whole life is spent, conditioned life means a soul takes on a material body with the aspiration of enjoying the material world to the fullest capacity. That's what conditioned life is all about. I have a material body made of senses. I want to enjoy the material world to the fullest extent in any form of I got. So then, this is very useless affair because there are too many obstacles. Suppose you have an apple seed and you want to grow an apple tree. And you are in an area that is filled with drought. It is filled with excessive rains. It is filled with insect plague. It's filled with animals that particularly like apple trees before they grow, like that. Will you try to grow an apple tree in that area? Why not? Because there's too many obstacles in trying to grow an apple tree in that area. So in the same way, the attempt for happiness in the material world is useless because it's filled with too many obstacles. It's too many obstacles are there. First obstacle is time factor, which is causing the deterioration of everything. And the time factor brings forth the manifestation of karmas. Karmas are fructifying upon the body all the time, causing so much of misery. Just like, I'll tell this story now. We read in the newspaper the other day of a man. He had a dentist girlfriend. This is far out. He had a dentist girlfriend, and he dumped her and hooked up with another girl. A very normal thing. 2 days later, his karma came in the form of a toothache. So he went to his ex-girlfriend, who was a dentist, and said, you know, can you help me out? My toothache is there. So she said, yeah, I'll help you out, no problem. And then she removed all his teeth. That's funny, but I mean, I was like this when I heard it. Can you imagine waking up? Very intense. She removed all his teeth. This was in the newspapers. It's not like a made-up story. She removed all his teeth. That's not even a funny part. You know what happened after that? His new girlfriend dumped him because he didn't have any teeth. He didn't have any teeth, so she dumped him. I don't want you. You know, you don't have no teeth. That was completely, it was a perfect example of the material world. Perfect. It's too many obstacles. You're trying to enjoy, the karmas are fructifying this way. I mean, what a horrible, horrible, horrible fructification of karma. Threefold miseries, miseries caused by other living entities. Adibhautika klesha. Of course, adidaivika klesha. Now, once you don't have any teeth, imagine what it does to the ego. The mind will really be giving you a workout after that. You ain't got no teeth. Everything is finished. Just commit suicide. What is the use of this body now? So you have the karmas are fructifying, and they're causing threefold miseries. And then, of course, you have good old birth, death, disease, known to age. You have these strong, strong desires which are unable to be fulfilled. And as we're getting older and older and older, everything becomes weakened. Even our enthusiasm to enjoy in that body becomes weakened. But the desire to enjoy the material world is as strong as ever. So imagine how miserable that situation is. It's like it reminded me of Nalo Kuvera and Manigriva. They have demigod bodies. So demigod body means heavy sense gratification, right? And then they got cursed to stand as trees with demigod consciousness. Try to imagine how intensely horrible. Like Bharat Maharaj got a deer body, but at least he was a sage, so he could tolerate, you know? He's a sage consciousness. He can tolerate, but demigod consciousness, tree body. So this is the material world. It is full of misery. And then, so therefore, the living entity more or less lives a life of lamentation. And then what does he get for his life of lamentation? Death. So therefore, Prahlad Maharaj is implicitly saying that these forms of life are without meaning. Simply, you live your whole life a life of lamentation, and for all that misery, all you get for that hard work and misery is death. There's no meaning. So he said, but Arthadham, this human form of life, civilized human form of life, a human form of life trained to worship Krishna, that life is full of meaning because it can get one the supreme goal of life. It can help one to die gloriously. The human form of life is meant for dying gloriously. Everyone has to die. That is unavoidable. So this is what this sannyasa is all about. Sannyasa ashram is also considered like civil death. So Prabhupada is speaking about how one should take sannyas before one is overcome by weakness, then one should take the sannyas ashram. So the varnashram culture is to systematically make us more and more internally detached so that we can die gloriously. This verse is there. I don't know if I can remember. I was trying to look it up. I looked it up upstairs. There's a verse I used to be really into the Vritrasura pastime. And there's a scene where Vritrasura is chastising all the demons from turning their back and running away. And he makes a point there. Jatashram rityum dhruva eva sharata sarvata pratikriya yastra nacheha klipta. He says, in this human form, Jatashram, anyone who has taken birth in this life, Jatashram means anyone who has taken birth, then mrityu dhruva, death is inevitable. Everyone's got to die. Everyone's going to die. Eva sarvata, this is true for everyone in the material universe. So don't think I'll go to Swargaloka because I heard in the Vedas that the demigods are amara, which means deathless. No. Eva sarvata, everyone's got to die in the material world. This is the reality. And pratikriya yasrana cheha klipta means no one has devised the means so far to get over this. No one has devised a plan. Pratikriya means, kriya means action. So pratikriya means counteraction. Klipta, no one has devised a plan to counteract this reality of the material world. Just like this Nrisimhadev pastime is coming. We've been reading about this in the Ishopanishad. How he went to Brahman to gain immortality. But he knew Brahman would not be able to do that. So he tried to take a roundabout way to become immortal by saying, I can't die here, not by man, not by animal, not by weapon, not by anything that's dead, like dead matter, not by anything that's living. So in this way, he thought, I've made a really roundabout way, so I'm basically immortal. I'm deathless. You know, very clever, but more clever than Hiranyakashipu is Krishna. So he came in the perfect form to kill him, you know? No, I'll show you. Oh, you think you're clever? You are clever. That was pretty clever. A good one. Good one. But I'll show you who is more clever. Me, namely, the Lord. So Prabhupada was discussing there in Ishopanishad, that is a materialistic mentality. They are always giving promises of, we've counteracted old age, right? So they're getting plastic surgery. You know, as soon as they get, 60, pull the face back. Some people have their faces pulled back so tight, they look like dolls. I forget the name of the actor or actress. It's an actress. Jay Keshava named her in class when I was bitching this before. She had her plastic surgery so intense, they joke about it that when she would, move her cheek, this part of the body would move also because everything was so tight, you know? And it looked totally ugly, but they're so miserable. I remember hearing from one of my, Ananda Swarup, a friend of ours, of one actress who got plastic surgery and all these things, and he said, on the outside, everything is young, but on the inside, everything is old. So why? Because they're trying to counteraction. They're trying to counteract the situation in the material world. They cannot do so. But people are so foolish that they believe the scientists. They speak all nonsense things. We figured out how to protect one from death. First of all, there's so many ways to die in the material world. What if there's an earthquake and I fall into the earth pit, you know? How do you protect me from that? Suppose there's a tsunami and I'm drowned at sea. How do I get protection from that? Anyway, people are very foolish and they're hoping against hope. Darashayaye, bahir arthamanina. That the scientists will be able to help me. They're trying to, Hiranyakashipu, trying a very roundabout way. But Krishna, as death, takes away everything, Prabhupada says. Mrityum, sarvaharashchaham. As death, he takes away everything. So no one, Vritrasura says, no one has been able to counteract this, and everyone has to experience this. So therefore, that being the case, one should die gloriously. So then he defines, what does it mean to die gloriously? He says, lokayashash. Anyway, I'm not remembering all the Sanskrit right now. Lokayashash means two things he gives. That death which promotes you to a higher situation. And loka means a higher planet. And yasha, that death which will bring fame. That is called the glorious death. Of course, it's in context of, and then he later on describes what is that death. He says there are two ways to die in this glorious way. One way is by accepting the principles of devotional service, and another way is by dying on the battlefield. So if we're not going to be dying on the battlefield, I guess we should take the other option, which is by devotional service. So this devotional service is meant for dying gloriously. Because by fixing our minds on Krishna, we can be promoted to the spiritual world, which meets the criteria of a glorious death. Not that I live the same useless life as all other jivas in lower life forms, and then quit my body in fear and anxiety and lamentation and so many unfulfilled desires and plans. That is a very horrible death. And being neglected by the loved ones. Because when you get very old, no one really wants to spend that much time with you. You know, so many smells coming out of every gate of the body, etc. It's like, we have experience like that at least. When your mother's, go and say hi to, you know, Papa Sammy, that was our grandfather. Or grandmother, and then you would go, because you have to embrace, but the smell be like, it's kind of intense. So then you just want to spend minimum time. This is, of course, due to bad training, by the way, but you want to spend minimum time, you know, as little as possible. Okay, do my dharma, you know, in 5-10 minutes. Okay, thank you. I have to go to the bathroom now. I'll see you later, like that. So no one wants to, and then the old person suffers that tremendously right before that. It's very miserable. All the persons they sacrifice their whole life to take care of are neglecting them. So that's a very horrible way to leave the body, absorbed in that way. So we should die gloriously by absorbing our consciousness in Krishna, and that way be promoted to the spiritual world. So Srila Prabhupada is giving another very horrible thing here about those who are neglectful of this principle of taking the Varnashram life, coming to the position of sannyas and preaching the glories of the Lord, and that way dying, living a glorious life and dying a glorious way, then he says, what happens to the materialistic household of persons? He says, at present time, even the oldest man in the family does not leave home, being attracted by wife, children, money, opulence, dwelling, etc. Thus, at the end of life, one worries about how his life will be protected, how his wife will be protected, excuse me, and how she will manage the great family responsibilities. This reminds me of a verse I learned a long time ago from Kulushekar. Bhava jale di kata nam dwandva vata hata nam sutra duri tre kalatra trana barartita nam vishama vishayato ye majatam aplava nam bhavati sharanam eko vishnu potanaranam. This is a cool verse. He says that for those who are present in this Bhava Jaladi, this ocean of material existence, he says they're always being bashed by the waves of duality. Dwandva, duality. Dwandva vatahatana means the winds of duality. The winds bring forth these huge waves that are psh, 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 happy, sad, victory, gain, or victory, defeat, gain, loss, happiness, distress. She likes me. She doesn't like me. Why she doesn't like me? She should like me. Dualities are constantly bashing the jiva like anything. He says as he's being pounded by the waves of duality. Vishama vishayatoye majjatam aplavanam. And he, while he's drowning in this ocean of sense enjoyment, the waters of sense enjoyment, aplavanam, without any boat to help him, then he describes, this is the part that really struck me, sutta duritre kalatra trana bhara artitanam. He is overwhelmed by the burden of distress of how I'm going to protect my sons, daughters, and wife. A very heavy burden, especially now with the economic situation being the way it is, where the anxiety will be very much increasing. Aplavanam, he has no boat that can help him. So the devotee is recommending bhavati sharanam eko, surrender to Krishna alone, Vishnu potanaranam. That boat can take you across this ocean. But for those who fail to do so, then their consciousness is overwhelmed by this distress. How will my wife take care? Just like I think it's Shankaracharya, the story is told. Is it Shankaracharya? Where he was thinking to take sannyas. Sridhar Swami, yeah, Sridhar Swami. He was married that time then. So he was thinking to take sannyas, and he was, but who will take care of the wife? And all these things were going on in his mind. And right at that time, a baby egg, is it? A lizard fell to the ground. Baby lizard, though. It was like a baby lizard. So he was seeing the baby lizard. Who is there to take care of the lizard? And then one fly was flying around, and the lizard, you know, did his program. And then he said, oh, Krishna's taking care of everything, sannyas. He went and took sannyas. He took that as indication from Krishna. Of course, it doesn't necessarily mean we have exact application, per se, because you need to be honestly on that platform of detachment by following Varnashram Dharma, by following devotional service to Krishna. But anyway, the point is that if one does not bhavati sharanam eko, surrender to Krishna alone, then this distress overwhelms the mind, even at the time of death. And as a result, Prabhupada's quoting A6 Gita, he has to get a body that matches his consciousness. So he takes on the body of a woman, at least in context here, along with the various fruitive results that will fructify in his next life, sinful or pious. So it is a very dangerous thing to not take the spiritual life as soon as possible. 5 years, 5 years we start, that means 5 years have been wasted. You know, 5 years have been wasted. Actually, it should start within the womb, where the mothers are availing themselves to excessive Krishna Katha as mother, what was Prahlad Maharaj's mother's name? Kayadu. She was in the ashram of Naramuni rendering a lot of devotional service, primarily by hearing from him. And Prahlad Maharaj got the benefit of that. That's where it begins, from zero. One. I think you're one when you're in the womb, actually, right? In Vedic culture, number one means when you're born, that's two, actually, second year. Anyway, so as soon as possible, start deeply trying to cultivate the name of Krishna. That is the specific Bhagavad Dharma for this age. Or else everything will be lost. We won't have the strength to overcome material conceptions in the old age, generally speaking. Of course, there's always exceptions to the rule, but we should never think that the atypical exception to the rule should become the rule. Just like we were hearing that story about how Srila Prabhupada came for this devotee's father, who was never very favorable towards devotional service. So Prabhupada came for him. So we may take great inspiration from that story, you know. Ah, Jai, very good story. Can you tell more of those stories to get me convinced to not take my life seriously in the youth? But we suppose Srila Prabhupada has come and taken him back home back to Godhead. That is called Kripa Siddhi, and that is completely possible. But that is an atypical exception to the rule. So the atypical exception to the rule should never be thought of as the rule for everyone. You know, the tendency is to think that Kripa Siddhi is all. Actually, most devotees achieve perfection by sadhana, and therefore so many books have been given for sadhakas. If most persons would achieve perfection by Kripa, there would not be the need for so many literatures. There would be no necessity for them. There would be no necessity to even read them in so much great detail, because after all, it's all mercy. But what is the mercy that is coming in the form of shastra, in the form of sadhus and guru who explain the shastras so that we might seriously take our human form of life, you know, seriously. So we shouldn't think that we shouldn't take too much inspiration, at least in terms of application, from these types of stories. We should understand that most devotees achieve perfection by sadhana, and therefore it would do us very well to take seriously the process of Krishna consciousness as soon as possible. As soon as we really genuinely get the realization that I must do it, means that even if we've wasted many years in frivolity, even if you're very old, but at that point you realize, seriously, I must take this Krishna consciousness, you can still achieve all perfection. Therefore, Krishna is told in Gita that even at the moment of death, one can achieve all perfection. I always took this verse as an encouragement from Krishna, that even at the moment of death, you can achieve all perfection. So from whatever moment we're seriously taking to the hearing process, perfection can be achieved. But we should understand that Kripa is not all. Our determination to become Krishna consciousness counts for a lot in Krishna consciousness. And therefore, this Yasoda Damodar Lila is worshipped for 1 month to make us thoughtful in the matter of becoming ourselves more and more determined in that actual purpose of our life. Otherwise, weakness comes and overtakes everything, and it may be very difficult at that time to become Krishna conscious. So that's my presentation. I tried to read the statements of the purport so there won't be any confusion about what I'm saying and how it relates to the purport. Are there any questions? Anyone wants to ask anything? Yeah.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. At the beginning of the class, you were explaining how we develop certain conceptions, certain idea of what we think is truth. And then when the old age comes, it becomes very difficult to overcome those conceptions. So that's one of the dangers of starting late, is now it's really hard to... And then you were also saying that even among sadhakas, if you're not hearing carefully enough, then we're not able to see beyond forget the phrase you used. So I was wondering if you could elaborate that on that a little bit, because it seems like a dangerous situation. You know, we think we understand this reality we're in, and because we're not hearing carefully enough, we're not able to see beyond it. But because we're so convinced that we know the truth, we don't even realize that we're not, that we're not hearing carefully. You see what I'm saying?
Okay, so then, what's the question?
It's more of like a... Could you elaborate on that a little bit more? Like, then how do you get over this? How do you...
No, there's only one hope. That's the hearing process. There's only hope. See, yaya tamam prapadyante tam sutai vajamiyaham. Krishna is told, and which way they surrender to me, I reciprocate accordingly. So one may be thinking, I'm chanting Hare Krishna, therefore, what is the necessity to hear carefully? Because by chanting, I'll achieve all perfection. But if one is chanting with inferior conceptions, then he will attain an inferior result. If one is chanting with, you know, specific wrong conceptions, he'll attain specific wrong results. If one is chanting with specific super excellent conceptions, then naturally he'll chain specific super excellent results. Therefore, where do those conceptions come from? The material conceptions come by material experience, and spiritual conceptions come by hearing. Not by experience so much. Not by experience so much, because our experience we will analyze in terms of modes of nature, because we're under the modes of nature. So even if we have a, therefore devotees sometimes they imagine that they've attained some, they've touched transcendence or something like this because they had, a good experience in the kirtan or something. But privately speaking, that experience, of course it's good, it's encouraging, no doubt, and it helps a person be progressive. But because we're under the modes of nature, which is told by Krishna to be insurmountable, unless we've really surrendered to Krishna, then that experience is filled up with modes of nature, which we're taking to be spiritual experience. So experience is not the all-in-all in building spiritual conception. The only thing that helps in building spiritual conception is hearing process. So when we hear, somehow or other, if we become fortunate, like Prabhupada says, somehow or other, he says, one cannot hear with rapt attention if he's not pure in mind. And if he's... one cannot be pure in mind if he's not pure in action. One cannot be pure in action if he's not pure in eating, sleeping, meditating, and defending. But then Prabhupada says, but if someone can somehow or other hear, after saying all that, he says, if somehow or other he can hear with rapt attention, then he can understand how Krishna's in the pages of the books of Bhagavatam, etc. So somehow or other, if we are yadrichaya, if we become fortunate to associate with a sadhu and really hear from him, without dozing off and all these things, which is the tendency, then we might be able to become fortunate by the erecting of full spiritual conceptions by which our chanting becomes meaningful. Bhaktisiddhanta is told that the hearing Harikata is the Swarup Shakti of Harinam. So just like if you want to associate with Krishna, you need the assistance of Krishna's Swarup Shakti, his internal potency. So similarly, if we want to associate with Harinam properly, we need assistance of Harinam's Swarup Shakti, namely Harikata, because they will give the spiritual conception which engenders service attitude. You wanted to say something?
Hare Krishna. This is a similar question, but a different angle, I guess. For those of us who are having many, many, many misconceptions, but it often seems like, I have the tendency to underestimate just how many misconceptions there are. What are the symptoms? How are those misconceptions manifesting in my life? How can I recognize that I have a long way to go?
Easily? Are you attached to sense gratification? Do you have lust issues? Do you have issues with fault finding? Do you have anger problems or complaining? Sometimes we think we don't have anger issues, but complaint is also part of that. Complaining a lot about the situations that you're in. Are you oftentimes moved by duality? Someone glorifies you and then you get really excited about that, and someone says something bad about you, you get really depressed about that. Affected by dualities? Are we overly attached, overly affectionate to family, with family members? Like that. So it shouldn't be too difficult to make out that we're working with a lot of deep misconceptions about life.
Also, what is this? What are the symptoms of having taste for chanting?
One symptom is you don't sleep. And that's the most easily observable, let's say, first installment. Someone cannot sleep because they're having pratibimba namabhas. Pratibimba means the reflection of the holy name. In that case, they're having strong desires for liberation or material enjoyment, and therefore they very strongly practice because they want to attain their material enjoyment. Like one Brahmin, I forget his name, I want to say Ram Das Vishwas in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He's always chanting the name of Ram. So everyone thought he was a great Ram Bhakta because he was Ram, constantly, nonstop. He went traveling with Raghunath Bhat Goswami to, I don't think he was Goswami at the time, to meet Lord Chaitanya. So at that time, Lord Chaitanya didn't pay no attention to him, you know? Everyone was glorifying him as a great Ram Bhakta. Lord Chaitanya didn't show him no mercy. So he was really bewildered because he wanted to actually get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Finally, Lord Chaitanya gave him mercy a little bit later on and said, you know, you're not too bad, but give up this desire to merge with Ram. So he knew that his strength in chanting was coming from a reflection of the holy name. It wasn't the name. So anyway, first stage is that, but definitely if we're sleeping during japa, that's a clear indication we don't have that much taste, for sure. So then the opposite will be, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur is particularly told in the Jiva Dharma that it can be understood that a person is having taste for the holy name of Krishna when he develops a profound taste for Hari Bhajan. That means all the aspects of worship of Krishna, you know, especially in relation to the deity. When he develops a profound taste for doing all, which includes Vaishnava Seva, because Vaishnava Seva also falls under the deity worship. It's part of the deity worship also. Then it can be understood he's chanting the pure holy name of Krishna, Shudanam Ruchi. And so if we're not having that much profound taste for service of Vaishnavas, for worship of the deity, for reciting of prayers and glorification of the Lord, for hearing, all these things are also connected to the deity, then we can understand that we've yet to fully, let's say, chant the pure holy name of Krishna, you know, Nam Ruchi. So that's Bhaktivinoda Thakur's, let's say, contribution to that topic. Are there any other comments or questions?
Just wondering, sometimes we hear in the Vedic literatures about the idea, like you mentioned, of dying a glorious death or something involving like fame. Like, and I've heard Prabhupada explain once, he was expressing disappointment that some of his sannyasis were falling down, and he said something like, they don't have any regard to protect their good name or something like that. So sometimes there's a point is mentioned that dying a glorious death, it means the devotee becomes famous or something like that. On the other hand, we hear like the devotee shuns all fame. He has no desire. He considers it untouchable. So yeah. I was wondering how those two might kind of be reconciled or anything you'd share.
So you'll find out if you would read the fourth chapter of the Madhya Lila in regards to Madhavendra Puri's pure devotion for his Gopal deity. After the sweet rice was stolen, you know the pastime, I'm not going to go through it. After the sweet rice was stolen by Krishna, Gopinath, and given to Madhavendra Puri, he took that sweet rice, and in evening time, the Brahmana gave it to him in the middle of the night. And he was chanting because he was chastising himself for thinking, I wonder how that sweet rice tastes, you know? And he was chastising himself, so he was just chanting the whole night to make up for his offense. And then the Gopinath deity came to the Brahmana, the Pujari, and told him, I saved a pot of sweet rice for that Madhavendra Puri. Go and find him and give it. So he was calling throughout the night, Madhavendra, is there anyone, Madhavendra Puri, anyone there? He found him. He gave the sweet rice, and Madhavendra Puri took that sweet rice, and then he immediately left that place because he knew that everyone would come to find out, and you know the multitudes of people would come to glorify him for that. So in that section, I think Kaviraj Goswami, he makes a point there that is the nature of pure devotion to Krishna, of devotion to Krishna, that it will attract fame. It will attract, the word that specifically uses pratishtha, it will, not that the devotee becomes puffed up, but that is the nature of rendering pure devotion to Krishna, that you actually become famous. In fact, Krishna also himself tells, what is fame? In Uddhava Gita, he says, what is fame? He says, to be known as a devotee is called fame. So fame will come for one who's really engaged in pure devotional service. So why is that in the context of dying a glorious death brings fame? Why is that important? Because in the future, others can see such a life, and they can see such a death also. Just like Bhishma quitting his body on the bed of arrows. So he's famous for that also. And he's famous for the instructions he gave on the bed of arrows. And he's famous for the attention to the etiquette that he showed, even in that condition, to all the great sages who came and greeted him. So in that way, he was teaching us how to die. So in that way, that fame is important. The devotees should teach other devotees how to leave the body. Because we learn all other things, but we don't learn about this. Therefore, when we were growing up, we all thought, I want to die in my sleep. That would be ideal. You know, or, you know, okay, make it an instant death. That would be ideal. Just let me, like a heart attack comes in like 5 seconds, gone. That would be the ideal death. So, because we're in ignorance. No one ever taught us how to die. We never got any instructions about it. And death was just like such a morbid topic. You better not bring that topic up. You know, you don't ask at the dinner table, you know, mommy, how do I die? What are you asking? Don't say such a thing. You know, they might get emotional or whatever, you know. No one's ever taught us. So this fame of a devotee is very important, that they teach us how to leave the body absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Like we've mentioned before with Gaur Govinda Maharaj, you know, which was so many devotees. He's the first example that came to mind. He was giving Harikata, you know, singing bhajan, discussing Jagannath, Leela. And then he tells one of his disciples, start kirtan. And then the disciple starts kirtan and he just leaves the body just like that while kirtan is going on. I mean, whoa, that's ideal. Today is disappearance day of Jayananda Prabhu. So then we can hear about Jayananda Prabhu and his life and how he left the body. Also in a glorious way. So this fame is very important for the world. We shouldn't shy away fame for bringing attention to Krishna. We should shy away fame for our own self-satisfaction. So we misunderstand everything can be used in Krishna's service, so also fame. Because as Prabhupada used it, fame for bringing attention to the Lord. So we don't shun fame. We shun fame for self-satisfaction. We don't shun sense objects, but we shun sense objects for self-satisfaction. So that is the important point there. That is the nature of pure devotional service. And on the stage of Anishita Bhakti, it's called Tarangarangini. When you're getting attention because of your devotional service and you want to ride that, you want to take advantage of that. That's a particular narta in the stage of devotion, which is unfixed bhajan. So, like that, that is important. Yeah. Okay, you can last comment then.
Just on this topic of glorious death, Jitendra Prabhu shared this book, Legacy of Love, with me. It's a biographical sketch of Mother Hladini, who is a Prabhupada disciple. And a really amazing book. I highly recommend it to everyone. But she was in Africa when there was like a civil war going on. I forget the country.
Liberia.
Oh, really? Okay, wow. So she was in this temple with devotees, and the militant ruler at the time came with this group of men, and some of the devotees had these hiding places they went to, but then a group of devotees, including Mother Hladini, came out to meet the people, and they were taken and brought to a nearby river, and the men, the Liberians, were only going to kill the men. They weren't going to kill the women, just take them captive. But as they raised their weapons, Mother Hladini attacked these men, saying, "How dare you attack Vaishnavas? You should kill me first." So the book was very inspiring, and this is a very nice example, I thought, of glorious dying.
Were killed the next year. I read that in the Almanac, actually, because, you know, you can look up the country and read a little history, and pretty interesting.
Hare Krishna.
Okay.
There are certain devotees who are fantastic. And with all respect to such great personalities like Mother Hladini and you know, all the other great personalities who must have left their bodies in such a fantastic way. the lesson is not necessarily that we all need to be also be like that. The lesson is that, at least what I'm taking, the lesson is that if we can leave our body absorbed in thoughts of service and somehow chanting of the holy name, that it itself is glorious. We may not have to leave, you know, in the middle of a battlefield in a dramatic way. It's not necessary. I mean, I'm not counteracting what he's saying. Like you said, you know, like that elderly gentleman, there was a severe stroke of kripa from Prabhupada. It's not necessary that we all have to have like that. Prabhupada has given us what we need to die gloriously. The most glorious death is somehow we remember Krishna. We may die without nobody knowing us.
As many Vaishnavas.
Right, you know. Not that we don't know Mother Jamuna, but she was in her room by herself, hand in her bead bag, and she left her body. Extremely glorious. Sri Pada Indra Prabhu, so many. I mean, they're all wonderful Vaishnavas, but nobody was there when they left their body. But it's still glorious. It doesn't have to be dramatic violence.
Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.